Dave and Barry with ScreenGeeks.com. We are talking to the talent and also the creator of one of the best films of the year. This is Best Worst Movie, about the trials, tribulations, making and unmaking, and the legacy of Troll 2. Gentlemen, please introduce yourselves and tell us not only your role in Troll 2, but also your role in real life as well. We'll start with the good doctor here.
My name is George Hardy, and I'm from Alabama. And somehow, I ended up in the worst movie ever made in 1989 called Troll 2. And I played the lead dad, and I played Michael Waits, Farmer Waits. And now, let's just fast forward 20 years later, I'm the main subject of a documentary called Best Worst Movie, directed and written, directed by Michael. You don't write a documentary. Right.
You hope not.
Michael Paul Stevenson to my left here.
Thanks for kicking it off to me, Georgie. Michael Paul Stevenson. I am the producer and director of Best Worst Movie, but more notably, you could say I'm somewhat of a Troll 2 expert. I played that screaming, whining 10-year-old brat, Joshua Waits, the child star of Troll 2.
You were a little shit, you know that.
All right. I don't deny it.
Remember the one line in Troll 2? Josh is just a little shit.
Yes.
You heard that?
Yeah.
So
I guess I'll kick it off this way with Troll 2. Where did both of you come to the point where, you know, instead of just kind of, you know, turning your head and pretending it never happened, what was the point that kind of made you embrace the legacy, if you will, of the film? Especially with you making the documentary. That's a very more of a step.
To give you a little bit of history, after our... When I was making Troll 2, and this is my first film, you know, I got cast as a star, and that's what I thought I was going to be. I thought I was going to be this, you know, a star. This is my ticket to Hollywood. And I imagined, as we were making it, you know, I imagined that it was like the next Gremlins or the next Labyrinth. And I figured we'd get the movie done, and then we'd go to the local Cineplex with my family. We'd all celebrate my on-screen performance. And a year passed after finishing the film. And Christmas, I was unwrapping presents, and the very last present that I unwrapped was a strange VHS tape titled Troll 2. And I looked at it and didn't know what it was, and I remember hearing my mom say, "Michael, it's your movie. Let's put it in and watch it." And thinking, what? This, you know, and then turning it over, because it was renamed. You know, when we made Troll 2, it was titled Goblin. And I turned over the VHS, and sure enough, there was my face on the back. And I just thought, wow, you know. And we popped it in. We all sat around the TV, and I remember my dad kind of, you know, was in the bathroom, stuck his legs up, and 7 seconds into it, I remember him just putting his head down and saying, "Oh, Michael, this is a bad movie." And I just watching this and thinking, this isn't my, what, you know, and just really like taking this all in. And I was young, but I was old enough to realize it was a bad movie. And so that moment, it was like I was embarrassed, dreadfully embarrassed by this film. You know, and then I went into my teenage years where you try to be cool, and the last thing I loved hearing were my lines being shouted out at me in the school hallways. This movie, and it just continued to haunt me, and it was like, man, this, I'm gonna die and be remembered as the kid who pisses all over his family's dinner. And I really wanted nothing to do with Troll 2. But I continued to act, actually, and I always wanted to be a filmmaker, and that was my dream. And about 5 years ago, I moved back to Los Angeles with my wife and continued to do what everybody else does in LA, send out headshots and resumes and meet with casting directors and write and go to, you know, and just, and pursue, you know, filmmaking. And out of nowhere, all of a sudden, in April of 2006, I started getting these messages from kids on MySpace. And they somehow found me or stalked me. And I got these messages that would say, you know, we're fans of Troll 2. Are you Joshua Waits? Please say it is so. And at first it was like, what? This movie is never going to go away. And these messages started coming in from different parts of the world, and nobody knew about each other. And they all said like things like, "I'm really a fan of this movie. I'm probably the only one. We watch it 100 times." And And then all of a sudden, it wasn't until I started getting pictures. I started these fans, and they kept, you know, and this was over all within the span of about a month. And I started getting these pictures where there would be 8 or 9, you know, 20-something college-age kids in a basement huddled around this TV and celebrating vegetarian goblins and watching the movie and dressing up and eating green cupcakes that said, you know, eat me, and green frosting across the top. And I remember just looking at these images and thinking, why? And just thinking, you know, like, I just kept thinking, this is, I was really captivated by it. All of a sudden, I wasn't the kid in this awful movie, and I was compelled, and I kept thinking, you know, so many movies that get made try to find an audience, and there's this marketing machine and this hype behind them, all trying to make a movie that's memorable or that leaves an impression. You know, something that you'll remember a week or 2 weeks from now. And here, I realized that Troll 2 had kind of come into it on its own. And it was finally, I had this feeling that it was reaching this kind of critical mass. And here's this movie that really should have been, and we hoped it would have been banished and forgotten about years ago, but had this will to live. And I couldn't get over that. And I became so engaged or compelled to understand, how does that happen? And I thought, you know, and this was way before any of the Troll 2 screenings or resurgence or anything like that. And I just thought, there's something special with this movie. And it was a morning or two after that that I woke up and I said, I'm the child star of the worst movie ever made. There's a story here. And I thought, best worst movie, and then it was fate, man. You know, it's wild, because after that, all of a sudden I was talking to this guy, you know, that I hadn't talked to in 20 years or 17 years, I guess, at that stage. And here's the guy that I wrestled with on set, and next thing I know, we're on the phone, and I said, George, I think there's something special happening with this movie. And as you know, George isn't very enthusiastic at all.
Oh, no.
But he was, let's do it, Michael. Let's, you know, and we just, like, we were like, let's have fun with this and embrace it. And I told him about the documentary and what I wanted to do and just covering this story. And then all of a sudden it was the New York City screening. And that was a real big moment for me, because it was the first time. I still felt, going to the screening, nervous. Going to it, I thought, what am I doing? And my interest was in telling the story, you know, and in the film. And so it was kind of like that gave me the courage. I literally remember going in the taxi and just thinking, are they going to throw tomatoes at us? You know, like, I imagined the worst. And before that, when I was thinking about the documentary, I've always been a big fan of docs like, you know, American Movie and King of Kong, and documentaries that are told through the characters and feel more narrative rather than like, you know, educational. Like, let's define this phenomenon. Right. Yeah, exactly. And I didn't know who was going to be the heart of this movie. I didn't want to hang the camera on myself. I would be far too boring. And I didn't know until we went to New York, and George and I, we were in a taxi, got out of the taxi, and we saw this line wrapped around the block for Troll 2. We didn't think it was for Troll 2. We, you know, thought it was for something else, and we were walking towards the entrance of the theater, and all of a sudden, fans just went crazy. They recognized George, and they're like, Farmer Waits, and people were screaming and just, like, going crazy, and I'm like, holy shit. And I looked over at George's face, and I'll never forget this moment, because I looked over at his face and saw him just, like, soak this in, and his face just brightened. And, you know, he's like, Michael, this is crazy, let's go! And I just was like, here it is, you know, here's the character for the story. Yesterday, he was giving root canals in small town Alabama, and now he's 400 fans that love him. And I felt really, there was something, you know, special about that. And then that screening continued on, and I just remember sitting in the back of the room and just being like, wow, this is insane. Because there was, over a movie that was so awful and bad in every cinematic principle, there was such positivity and fun and entertainment that was being had in that room. And I just remember thinking, this is amazing. And then it just, you know, it was like it steamrolled. It just continued. Sorry, that was a very long...
No, that's okay.
That's great.
Dr. Hardy, since the release of this film, have you had a lot of calls saying, can we have the doctor who was in Troll work on our team? Have you had a lot of that now? Or?
More like people stop by the office that are Troll 2 fans.
There was a couple that drove from Florida.
From Panama City just last week.
And
wanted a picture taken with me.
But then again, you're probably the only dentist that sells Troll 2 at your office. So.
Do you really?
He does.
I give it away. So if you want to come by my practice in Alabama, I'll give you a copy of Troll 2. One time I walked out the front, I was back there doing a root canal, another root canal, and I went out to the front, and I'm only about 45 minutes from Auburn University, where I went to college, and then I graduated from dental school to Alabama at Birmingham. But anyway, the front desk lady comes to me, and she goes, Dr. Hardy, there's someone out front that wants to see you. He's a student at Auburn, and they're doing a paper on Troll 2. And I go, what? You got to be kidding me. I walked outside, and this guy said, would you mind, it's Auburn student, probably in his graduate school. And I go outside, and there's like all these Auburn students that had come up and done a couple, two or three cars, had driven up for a road trip. They wanted me to sign just anything, or have a picture taken with them, which I did. And then I had 15 copies of Troll 2 at the office.
He just happened to have them.
I just happened to have them. I gave him all like a copy of
Troll 2. Do you have it playing in your waiting room? Or?
No, it's too scary for the kids, I see a lot of children, so.
You do show it to people, though, when...
I've shown it. At one point, and in fact, it's kind of funny because Entertainment Weekly did it. A nice article on Michael and myself. The Troll 2, right before South by Southwest, the premiere there. And that was my second experience with Entertainment Weekly. The first experience was Entertainment Weekly came to me because I was one of the first dentists in the States to use these virtual eyeglasses on my patients. And for the fun of it, I would show Troll 2 to my adult, my patients, to get their minds off when I was doing a root canal, but I never watched
Troll 2.
What's funny though is I could never watch Troll 2. I mean, I never really could watch it all the way through.
Yeah.
And in fact, the very first time I ever really watched Troll 2 all the way through, from start to finish, was at that first big screening we had, the premiere up in New York City. So here we are today.
So many ways to go with this. I think one thing I want to ask you is, specifically with all the subjects that you cover, I'll handle this delicately, and I certainly expect you to not say anything you wouldn't want to say. There's some very personal information about yourself as well as your subjects. Where did you find the line to be like, I need to pull back, or I need to continue to pursue this? And did at any point did you say, I don't want my personal life in here. I don't mind if they know that I'm a DDS, but there are certain things. Did you ever put your foot down and say, I don't know if I want my...
Yeah, I've had a little bit of fear about people stopping, but knowing where I'm from and where I practice dentistry and that kind of thing. So, no, I mean, Michael created such... I've known Michael since he's 10. There was an absence of 17 years, but then when we... reconnected. There was this feeling of trust, and Michael never put me in really awkward situations. That much, really awkward situations. To be honest, I was pretty comfortable. I think what the beauty that he had with me and others was I'll brag on Michael right now in front of him. I will do it. No, I watched him interview so many people. You imagine going back and getting a 13 to 14 main cast members and interviewing all those 17 years later that ran from a film, and plus to get your director from another country to accept that he's the director of the worst. Can you imagine that?
So, I don't know that he's actually accepted that.
Well, to accept an interview is what I'm saying. Michael is just, it was so safe and created a safe environment, not only for me mostly, but with everybody. And so from that, I had a feeling of trust that I could go into a premiere, like Michael might have mentioned in this interview earlier, but maybe not. But he's mentioned in some of the interviews. My first experience to see Best Worst Movie was at South by Southwest at the premiere. And so, it was a pretty vulnerable situation for me. But at the same time, I knew and trusted that they, would put it together in a beautiful way. Not only with me, but the other.
I think especially with Margo. Yeah. I think there comes a point where, you know, it's like, it's time to leave. And exactly at that moment is when it kind of pulls out. And it was just absolutely, it couldn't have been done better, I don't think.
I mean, you know, the biggest thing is really, this, I have for everybody in this Troll 2 family, I have such genuine care. So it started from that place. It was never a love for what was happening with the film. It was never let's create this story. Like, I really, it's kind of like a dysfunctional family in a way. Everybody's got their quirks, but you still love each other at the end of the day, and you still get along. And so it was always like, I was very sincere in each character, in my intention and what I wanted to do. And I would never want to poke fun or get cynical or negative. And so there was a line, there was a line of like, how do you show the truth behind these characters? Because that's really what I was interested in. I wasn't interested in defining the phenomenon or having outside experts tell me what makes a bad movie. I really wanted to understand the people that were behind it. I wanted to know what was going inside Claudio's head. I wanted people to be able to understand that this is the same director that we worked with, and this is how he worked with us 20 years ago. And these are the people that are behind this awful movie. You know, Grandpa Seth, he's feel like he's, frittered his life away. He's never had a grandkid, and so really trying to get those human moments. And I was blessed and very fortunate that I had such, George being so gracious in just letting me invade his life for so long. And all of the characters really were very transparent and honest. And that doesn't, it is... it's a process getting to that. I mean, we shot over 400 hours of footage. Wow. And I think it boils down to trust and just really having, like, caring about Margo and caring about every character that was involved in this movie. And I had times, where in while we were editing, just at 3 a.m. thinking, I've got to be so sensitive to Margo and finding that line. With that said, I didn't want it to be a story that was all butterflies and bliss and sold out screenings, and I wanted to give something to the audience that they didn't expect. Everybody knew they were going into this movie to laugh and to learn about a bad movie, but maybe they didn't know who these true people, who these people were. So
that's one of my favorite things about your film, because it is like American Beauty. You really have such affection for the subjects you capture, and I really appreciate that. You both seem to agree what the worst movie ever made is. What, in your opinion, is the best? Do you have like a favorite movie, or like a movie you would say, I was in the worst, but this is the best?
Well, that's a tough one.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been messed up so bad by this Troll 2 thing that I can't even say Troll 2 is a bad movie anymore. It's wild, because what is bad, really? I mean, how many... There are worse movies than Troll 2, and Troll 2 fails, in every principle, but it doesn't fail to entertain. And whether that's intended or not, it still brings people. It still gives people a good time. I think my favorite movies. I could go on and on, but I loved American Movie. I love a lot of documentaries. Devil and Daniel Johnston, King of Kong.
I love The Wizard of Oz.
That's a good choice.
Or The Sound of Music, or Shawshank Redemption. I mean, there's so many great, but,
It's odd, because for me, Troll 2 is like the best and worst. It's like, I've never seen a movie. I've come out of so many Troll 2 screenings, and I've never seen a movie have that much impact and enjoyment on people.
Everyone walks out with a smile on their face.
Yeah,
absolutely. Now, I'm sure this isn't the case now, but, or maybe it is. Man, I'm trying to phrase this as politically correctly as possible. I think a lot of the failures in Troll 2 probably came from the direction. Would you rather have had a movie that was directed in a different way and possibly been just a mediocre movie, or have the abject failure that is Troll 2 that you can just kind of have fun with now?
I'm not entirely clear.
It's very possible that Troll 2 could have just been thought of as just a mediocre movie that just faded off into obscurity and never was seen again.
Right.
I'm sure when you were younger, you were like, please.
That was my prey every night. Please, you know, man. I swore that if I ever had the chance, I would eradicate every copy of Troll 2 that existed. The thing about Troll 2, though, is it's not, you know, sure, direction can also, you know, it was, you know, the direction was crazy.
Yeah.
But here was every element of filmmaking.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
just gone.
Yeah. The costumes.
In ways you couldn't imagine. I mean, this perfect maelstrom of, like...
Like in Best Worst, maybe. We were interviewing one of the film programmers up there for the Brattle Theater, and she says the stars aligned. She says that in Best Worst, maybe about Troll 2, when Troll 2 was made. She says the stars aligned, which, you know, is just every aspect of what happened, you know, in making the film, the fact that we were all non-actors, the fact that Claudio and Russ... Rossella and the crew couldn't speak English. The fact that Rossella wrote this incredible fairy tale. The fact that the script was changed without any questions being asked. The fact that, you know, you've got burlap sacks that Laura Gimsler put together. Who, you know, the fact that, I mean, all of us were cast. I mean, I can't even think of any of us being a different, you know, it's just amazing. The stars did align for this whole thing. And the fact, really, that we're here today talking about this is it's a miracle. The fact that I'm a cult luminary.
That's right.
It's just
an engaging presence in this film. Have you thought about, has anybody approached you? Seriously, I can see you taking character roles.
If I get relaxed enough, I'll probably relax with you guys, because every time we interview, you know, you're kind of exposed, and this is kind of, you know what I'm saying?
We're in a closet.
There are other people walking around you, and they're looking at you. You know, I would really love to do something. I really would. I do enjoy being in front of the camera, like I said in Best Worst Movie. And Michael had to really get that out of me. I think that was an ego thing that I didn't want to share. I think, I think I could interview. I don't know what it would be, but it'd be something. I get it.
I can't rest until I get him on Dancing with the Stars.
That would get me to watch Dancing with the Stars.
Without a doubt.
Can you cut a rug?
Yeah. I'm talking.
To give you an idea, this guy, you know, he's so engaging. But I had a filmmaker last week that contacted me about giving George a role in his film.
Right.
So, the world would be a better place if we could get you on screen.
I agree.
Absolutely. Thank you, really.
I have a question about Claudio in Best Worst Movie. When you go back to the house and you're reenacting it and you're just having fun, you know, can you see what this sign said? You know, was he really seriously trying to get you guys to, like, recreate the magic?
That was the best thing. I mean, we went back to that set and it was just like, all of a sudden it was like, 20, you know, take us back to the past. Claudio was like, you go to the, you say the line 1, 2, 3. It was just like, okay, we're back in Nova. It was like, he was so, you know.
What was it when we came up first time? I didn't know this until Michael told the story the other day about it. We've done probably 200 or 300 interviews, honestly. And Michael said the story about Claudio when he drives to Claudio's, he's in the car with Claudio and he's filming Claudio. For him to see the line in L.A., this is the first time he comes back to see all these fans come see his movie for the first time in America. And he goes something to Michael about going to McDonald's and getting
he
wanted to recreate.
I had a camera.
We're not laughing at you, Claudio.
The thing Claudio said when he saw the line in L.A. is he looked at me and he said, Michael, we have to make a sequel. He said, tomorrow you bring cameraman, we shoot a little promo. We're going to McDonald's, you grab a hamburger and scream. We shoot it. And I just sat there amazed, like, anything you want, Claudio.
So do you think that he understands exactly what the phenomenon is in the U.S.?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't think it's like, he understands it his way.
Okay.
And I think that, like, everybody, really, who, you know, It's so hard, especially with something like a phenomenon and the cultural differences. But
absolutely.
It's like, who? I would never want to be like, here's the picture, here's the colors you're supposed to see it for how it is. He's made this own experience of it his own. I think so, he understands some of it, and others he doesn't. He's an artiste, and he's very serious and very passionate filmmaker, and has a lot of heart, and that's really what made Troll 2 what it is. Mm-hmm. Because that sincerity that you saw in Best Worst Movie is the same sincerity that he led us with when we were making Troll 2, and every one of us were just as earnest and sincere in making Troll 2 and thought we were making this great horror film, and of course we failed miserably, but it's that genuine seriousness that
he says, all I do is make movies, all I want to do is make movies.
Absolutely.
And really, that's all he really cares about.
And
move people.
Yeah.
One thing I really appreciated was the fact that you had this story about where everyone is now, but you also gave people like myself, I hadn't seen Troll 2 until last night.
Oh, wow.
And this is the perfect primer because it doesn't give away the best punchlines.
And it makes you excited to see Troll 2.
Absolutely.
The only way it should be seen.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And it doesn't frame it as in, you know, a mocking way. It's just, you just enjoy the goofiness that is on screen. You know,
it's a great preheat setup, isn't it?
It totally is, absolutely. Now,
the nice thing about Best Worst Movie, I want to say, is that to people listening too, is that you don't have to see Best Worst. You don't have to see Troll 2 in order to see
to enjoy Best Worst.
But you're going to want to watch Troll 2.
But what I'm saying is that what Michael's found, and we have in showing the documentary to so many people now, is it's a double wow to see Best Worst Movie for first.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's the only way to tell people to watch.
That was a big thing. You know, when making this film, was thinking, you don't want to. You got to make a movie about another movie, but you don't want to make people to feel like they're on the outside of an inside joke. You don't want them to feel like they have to see Troll 2, like this is the making of. And gratefully, you know, there's a very specific person that seeks out to find movies like Troll 2, and it's not the masses. It's a very specific type of person. And people who haven't seen Troll 2, what I've seen through Best Worst Movie is because of this guy and how engaging he is and how, come with me on this fun, you know, all of a sudden people who would never be interested in Troll 2, 60-year-old women afterwards have told me that as soon as they saw the movie, they're going home to watch Troll 2. So it's like, you really, you know, I don't know if that's a bad or a good thing, actually.
You're to see what the group is.
I'm
really close
to myself.
For Troll 2.
Right.
So with distribution, when can people see this outside of the festival circuit for Best Worst Movie?
You know, I'm sorting through all of that right now. We have distribution offers, and we have different people that are interested, or different companies. But, you know, it's a film like this, you fight an uphill battle. You really do. It's a documentary about vegetarian, you know, the worst movie ever made, which is about vegetarian goblins. You have to, it relies on word of mouth. Unfortunately, we played on the festival scene great. We're wrapping up our festival circuit here shortly. And then we're going to release the film, you know, theatrically, probably the top 10 markets, and then, you know, all the other windows, DVD and so forth. But we're still like working all those rights out. It's a really interesting time in the industry.
Absolutely, especially for an independent film.
It is. It's wild, and so much has changed even since we've premiered. And it's more, you know, I've played everything really close to the chest. I'm not in a rush. This movie means so much to me that I'm being very deliberate in every decision that I make, in hopes that it can reach the audience that I know that it can. So I'm very much involved. I'm not about to say, oh, we're done, here you go. Because really, who knows more about the movie than us? And so until I feel like, I kind of feel like I've been working on this for almost 4 years now, but I feel like I'm kind of mile 24 of 26 mile marathon. You know, I have to continue to help support it throughout distribution. So I'll be involved in one shape or another.
Very cool. What are some of the subsequent festivals we can see, meet you guys and see this film?
Upcoming ones?
Mm-hmm.
We play Whistler Film Fest, actually. Is it 2 weeks?
December 3rd, yeah.
Yeah, December 3rd. And then, you know, we're looking at a few other domestic festivals, but we're right at the tail end. Actually, we've played, and I
it's all a blur, but we've played, it's, I think we played almost close to 30 festivals worldwide, and fantastic festivals, man, and what an incredible, incredible experience to take this around and see the reaction. So festival-wise, you know, we're coming to the end. We are looking at creating a like a university campaign before a theatrical release, and picking schools that have strong film departments, art departments, and creating an event around the worst movie ever made and showing the documentary and Troll 2 and just having fun with it in hopes that we can broaden our audience in time, you know, so that when it comes time to open the film theatrically, there'll be more interest in actually going to the theater and seeing it.
Fantastic.
Sweet. Dr. Hardy, Michael Stevenson, thank you so much for sitting down with us.
Thank you, guys.
This has been a blast.
Right.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.